statistics that I picked up from a number of tracts just to sort of challenge our hearts as we think of the world today. I'm going to give you a little bit about the work in the Philippines, but I'd like you to think of the mission field today as the world. Just a few of little thoughts that I have picked up that have challenged my heart over and over again as I think of them. As we think of the world in which we're living today, as we think of the growth of communism and the effect it's having in the world, then we ask ourselves the question, what have we been doing? Communism was born in 1903 with 17 members. 1903. Today, one-third of the world's population are in what they consider the communist orbit. One-third of the world's population is in the Christian orbit. The other third is in the orbit of never heard. But it's tremendous to think that close to 3 billion people are under the control or influence of communism, some of them very avid communists, in the last 70 years. Tremendous. Christianity has been going a lot longer. An article written in a communist paper in France a few years back said that the Christian doctrine is far greater for changing world society than is their Marxist doctrine. And yet they claim that they will win because they are willing to spend and be spent. One-third of their time and one-half of their income is given over to communism. They say the Americans are, or the Christians are afraid to soil their hands. And I believe it's true. Another thought that they had mentioned was the fact of how much has been spent at the present time by the communists. They spend $2 per every free man in the world for literature, for propaganda purposes. You know how much Christianity spends? 2 cents. For every free man. They're spending 100-to-1 ratio. No wonder they're expanding. And we're sitting back. With this thought in mind, let's consider these few thoughts from Genesis chapter 22 this afternoon as we think of ourselves and where we stand. The story in Genesis chapter 22, we won't take time to read it because I'm sure you're very familiar with the story of Abraham and Isaac. Probably have heard preachers preach about it a number of times. First of all, let's notice in the first two verses is the trial of faith, Abraham's trial. Abraham, who had been now blessed by God in the receiving of the son that he'd been so long looking for at the age of 100. And now comes this trial to test him. You'll notice that if you have a new Scofield Bible, verse 1 reads that way, and it came to pass after these things that God did test. Or try Abraham. Test him to see what he was like. James in chapter 1 verses 12 and 13 reminded that God doesn't tempt man, but he does try and test him. God's testing Abraham's reality here. He's testing him as to his reality and his faith. He says he has faith in God and God is going to test that faith. He says he's obedient to God and God's going to test that obedience. And then God says that he loves God. And God's going to test him and see what he really does love him. God does the same thing for us today. He puts us on trial. Yes, we have faith in God. And he puts us on trial to see if we really do have faith. Yes, we obey God. So he puts us on trial. Are we really obeying him? What about love? Yes, I love God. And then he tests our love. Notice the test that he gives to Abraham. How unnatural it was. It would have been very natural for Abraham to be asked to take a sacrifice of an oxen or a lamb with which he had plenty. But no, he was to take his son. His only son. One whose all this hopes is centered upon. For the previous chapters of this, the only other son that he had, Ishmael, he had put out of his home and sent away. Now he has everything centered in this young one young man. He's to take him and offer him up as a sacrifice unto God. Not only was he the only son, he was his well-beloved son. And he takes his son of promise and obeys God. Verses 3 to 10 of the chapter, we find the obedience of faith. we find his quick response. I don't know what went through Abraham's mind, what thoughts he had as God told him what to do, but we do know from these verses that he immediately obeyed God. There are three times in the life of Abraham that's recorded for us where Abraham got up early in the morning. The first one is in 19th chapter in the 27th verse. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. Previous to this, he had been in the Lord's presence interceding for Sodom and Gomorrah and asking God to spare the city. And now he turns around at the end of the, after the night and gets up early in the morning and goes out to see exactly what God had done. Here we find his intercession or the judgment, his judgment upon worldliness. Worldliness has to be cut out. Judgment has to come. Intercession is necessary. Up early in the morning. 21st chapter in verse 4, we have him getting up early in the morning again. Verse 14. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting on her shoulder, gave her the child and sent her away, and she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Here we have Abraham getting up early in the morning in separation. Separation from the flesh, cutting off the flesh, judgment of the flesh. Then here in chapter 22, we have Abraham getting up early in obedience, complete yieldness to God. Lord says, take your son, and Abraham gets up early in the morning and takes his son, and off he goes to the place where God will show him. One of the first impressions I had as a young boy was getting up early in the morning and finding my father out in the fields. Dad would get up early, and things start early in the Philippines. You're off and going by 6 o'clock in the morning, so it's early. And I'd get up and I'd find Dad out in the fields. Never forget it. Had a profound impression upon me when Dad would get up so early to spend time with God. Well, Abraham got up early. The importance of getting up early. He has a basis for his faith, and his basis for believing God and trusting God was his implicit, unreasoning, unquestioning belief in God's wisdom, power, and love. And Abraham, I believed at this point, believed God to such an extent that he never felt that he would lose his son. He may kill him, but he was convinced that God would raise him up. Notice verse 5 when he speaks to his young men. And Abraham said to his young men, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. I will come again. We'll come again. Complete confidence that he will go up to the mountain, and he knew what he had to do when he got up on the mountain, but complete confidence that coming down off that mountain would be Isaac and Abraham. Hebrews chapter 19, he believed that God would raise up his son, even if he had to kill him. And so we find then his prompt response. Verse 7, we have the question as they lay as they go up to the mountain. Think of the anguish of Abraham. As they mounted up those 3 days, for 3 days they travel. Parents that are sitting in the audience today, I'm sure can imagine what must have gone through Abraham's mind for 3 solid days as he wandered up the mountain, traveling along with all those thoughts that in the last 3 days he was going to have to plunge a knife into his son's body and kill him. The anguish, the turmoil. And yet when his son comes with the question, where is the lamb? Complete calm in Abraham's voice as he answered in verse 8, and Abraham said, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went, both of them, together. Complete confidence in God. Notice this wonderful answer that God will provide and how God has provided. We are benefiting by the provision that is ours through the Lord Jesus Christ. And then we find as they get up in the mountain, Isaac's surrender to his father. Now, I don't know how old Isaac was at this time. Some people have said he was probably a young man, 18, 19, or 20, 21. I'm not convinced of that. I think he was more of a lad of about 12 or 13. But regardless of what age he was, remember his father was over 100. And I can't conceive of a man 110 or 112 even, being able without any problems tying a 12-year-old boy up and putting him on an altar without the boy having some struggle, unless he surrendered. Isaac surrendered. Abraham in his willingness, Isaac in his surrender, complete. Then the reward that was there as they found the lamb and a substitute was provided and Isaac was free, we notice what provision has been made for us in the Lord Jesus Christ and the Son of God. In the past, the Savior has been provided for us as he died upon the cross. The present today, an advocate is seated at God's right hand in the Son, Jesus Christ. And in that future day, a King coming. So as you think of Abraham and Isaac, we think of this quotation, if God the Father and God the Son has done so much for us, what can we do but submit to him? What else can we do? I am on the Lord's side. We can't do anything else when we consider all that he has done for us. We submit to him. Then we see the great need around about us. We ask, like Isaiah of old, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? That's the important question. What wilt thou have me to do? The Lord spoke to us and called us out to the Philippines. Of course, it wasn't very difficult for me to go back to the Philippines. I was going home. As I told one of the young ladies this afternoon, I'm an MK. And so I was going home, and my wife has always accused me of taking her back to my mother. But we went back, and we've been there for a number of years now, serving the Lord in a number of ways. We will be showing pictures tomorrow night, the work that we've been engaged in with Faith Academy, a school for missionaries' children, the radio work. This afternoon, I'd like to just give you a little bit about the radio work and the Far East Broadcasting Company and the expansion of the Far East Broadcasting Company and the means that they have been using in getting the gospel into areas where the doors have been closed and more doors are closing, and then bring you up to date as far as the political situation is in the Philippines. Just think of the Far East Broadcasting Company. They started out in the Philippines. And as they started in the Philippines, they were looking for an area where they could reach two-thirds of the world's population, because two-thirds of the world's population live right in this area. And they were interested in getting the gospels of that two-thirds of the world's population, where in many cases the missionary couldn't get in. And so they started, and the Lord has blessed here in the Philippines. The next thing they did was open up a station in Okinawa, and that station was primarily to broadcast to China. It was a 100,000-watt transmitter broadcasting into China, reading the Chinese Bible daily, as many of the Chinese had no Bibles. By the way, they get letters out of China regularly. They know people are listening. They are convinced from letters they get out and from reports they get out, we can't prove it, but we're convinced, the church in China, the Christian church in China, has grown probably far faster in these last few years than it ever did before. They don't have any Bibles. They can't have any formal meetings. They meet in secret. They do meet, and they do listen to the radio, and this is their Bible. The last few years, there's been an agitation by Japan to get the Okinawan Islands back again. And because of their relationship, the relationship between China and Japan, the Chinese put the pressure on Japan. And so part of the agreement that was made with the United States government when the islands were turned back was that 1,000-watt transmitter station would be put off the air. So when the islands were returned to Japan this year, Far East Broadcasting Company station, as far as broadcasting to China is concerned, was off the air. So, towards the end of last year, the Far East Broadcasting Company was interested in continuing, and so they started looking around, and they found a little island, which is the Hawaii of Korea. It's called Jeju Island, and it's just off the southern tip of Korea, a summer resort type of island, 36 acres in the island, and they have gone and taken practically all the island for the broadcasting station. They started building a station there. If they're not on the air, they will be on the air very shortly with a 250,000-watt transmitter broadcasting to China. Now, of course, they're a lot closer than they were when they were in Okinawa, directly to China. They have a station that's 150,000-watt transmitter larger than what they had in Okinawa. They are dismantling the station in Okinawa, bringing it down to the Philippines, and are hoping to set it northern part of the Philippines, the very tip, and increase the wattage from 100,000-watt to 250,000-watt. We trust by the end of next year, but maybe by the middle of the year, that they will be broadcasting into China with 500,000-watt transmitters. Now, that's five times what they had in Okinawa. The devil closed one door. The Lord opened it up in another way. Broadcasting, as I say, into China with all three languages daily. And besides this, with these stations, they're now broadcasting into Russia. It's tremendous to see the response they get from Russia. A year and a half ago, one man wrote out from Russia asking for a Russian New Testament. And Mr. Koziel, who is in charge of the Russian broadcasting in the Philippines, knew that they could not possibly send the New Testament in without it being confiscated. So he had the New Testament printed in the Philippines in loose leaf, and he sent in a page at a time until it all got in. Well, that became very tedious to continue sending the New Testament in this way. So what they did was to take a microfilm, and they put it all on microfilm and sent one film in of all the New Testament. And then it was redeveloped in Russia and now being printed in Russia, and they have their New Testaments. Every day they receive letters from Russia, those who are listening to the broadcast in Russia. And so we're thankful for the message going into these two areas because the missionary can't get in. Another area of concentration for radio, where because there is no radio broadcasting in that country at all, is the country of India. They do not allow religious broadcasting in India. All the stations are owned by the government, and they will not allow a religious broadcast. So all religious broadcasts have to be made outside. Many of the broadcasts have come from the Philippines, but going across the land here, the signals are not as clear. And so they started in, and they put up a station in the Seychelles Islands here, north of Madagascar. They've been on the air, I think, for just over a year now, broadcasting primarily into India. But they are now starting to open up into broadcasting into Africa. And Bill Deans was there just recently with the thought of some broadcasts to Zaire, and also for follow-up work with the Bible correspondence courses, the Mayor's courses. Now, as you think of radio, this is one of the largest radio stations. The next one would be Quito, Ecuador, Christian radio stations, and then there's Transworld Radio. But there are 53 Christian radio stations around the world, broadcasting the gospel around the world. And not long ago, somebody made a survey, and in surveying, they found that on these 53 radio stations, that probably one-fourth of all the time of broadcasting is made by Assembly missionaries. So we're doing a tremendous amount of broadcasting, and we're thankful for this way that the gospel can get into many areas where the doors are closing. We heard this afternoon in our letters of the problems that they're facing in Africa. And in the Philippines, as we think of the political situation, the present time is not very pleasant. We left the Philippines, our family, in June of last year. We came home on furlough, expecting to go back this year. When we were home, we'd been home during the summer for 3 months with our oldest girl, who had come home 2 years prior to that time. We realized after being with her for the summer that mother and dad couldn't leave that soon. And so after much prayer and consultation with our brethren in our home assembly, we all felt that we should stay home at least till July of 73. Just after this, of course it was already in the wind, but none of us knew it. Just after this, we made that decision in November of last year. In March of this year, the brethren at the CMML complex and office came and asked us if we would consider moving in and taking over their new building that they were purchasing. We'll be showing you pictures of that new building and the work that is ahead of us as we move down to it, which we have already moved into partly. I say we're a separated family at the present. My wife and two smaller children are living in the home we have in northern Jersey, and I'm living with the two high school children down south, and we have weekend privileges. But we hope within the next 2 or 3 weeks to have the family united again as we move all together down to this new complex. It's a tremendous building, and they ask us if we would go in and manage it for the time we're home on furlough. Whether we go back will be depending upon how the Lord leads after we have spent this next year and a half at CMML. But now go out to the Philippines and think of the political situation. The last few months, particularly the last 6 months, things have gone downhill. Jim LaValle is home now. His father passed away last week, and he was home for the funeral. And I was down to see Jim LaValle for 2.5 hours the other night. We were discussing the problems that are being faced in the Philippines today. I asked him just what it was like, and he said it's not good. this last month, the month of September, as far as the communists are concerned, they call themselves now the Liberation Army. This month has been bombing month. And they have gone and bombed all kinds of places throughout the city of Manila. For instance, a armored truck was blown up outside the front of the bank and all the building was completely destroyed. They bombed waterworks and the electric company and so on, just a harassment. Then the month of October is to be assassination month, when all high officials will be assassinated, or as many as they can get at. Then November will be harass the foreigner month. Just what's going to happen in the next 2 months is hard to say. They've already started their assassinations, according to the paper this morning. And also, according to the paper this morning, if you've seen it, they have established martial law in the Philippines. Jim LaValle said that all the missionaries in the Philippines today, whether they are assembly missionaries or the other missionaries from other organizations, all feel exactly the same way, that a revolution could be had in the Philippines within minutes or the next few days if it was so desired. And of course, what would happen? Communism would take over and it would be another communist country. So how much longer the missionary has in the Philippines, we do not know. Slowly, pressure is being put on to eliminate the American. They have passed and had passed a law that after 1974, all American property would be confiscated, so that no American in the Philippines would be able to own property after 1974. Now they have a case in court. The Chief Justice has announced that this is going to be the case, and from now on, they are going to start confiscating American property. Problem is, of course, that they face is they didn't stop to think that there are more brown Americans in the Philippines than there are white Americans. By that I mean there are many Filipinos who are American citizens. They're going to lose all their property, too. This is one question that they didn't think of. The next question they didn't think of is how much it's going to cost them as they take back this property. Of course, some of them are saying, don't give them a thing, just take it away from them. They don't deserve anything, see? But the president says, no. If we're taking the property, we're going to have to pay for it. Where they're going to get the money to pay for it, of course, is another question. So we are living in a powder keg. We don't know what's going to happen. And how much longer we have in the Philippines is still much in doubt. We would ask you to pray for those who were there. They've gone through a tremendous time this last 3 months. They had floods during the month of July that are unbelievable. The rainfall, you think you've had rain. The rainfall in the Philippines during the month of July, 1 month. In the lowlands, it was 6 feet of rainfall in 1 month. In the mountains, it was 15 feet of rainfall in 1 month. That was the measured rainfall, 15 feet. They've had floods that they've never seen the likes of in the Philippines. Mr. LaValle said there are places that are completely, you would never recognize them. What was a street one day was a complete river the next day. And it left this big gorge. He told me of one place in the northern part of the Philippines that I know very well. He says that the sand came down and buried the army camp with 3 feet of sand. And they were still digging out when he left. They say the economy of the Philippines is back to just after the war. Foodstuff is tremendous in price, 5 and 6 times what it was in April. And so they're feeling it tremendously, not only the missionary, but the national as well. We are thankful. But as far as we know, only one Christian family amongst from the assemblies in the Philippines, only one family lost everything. Of course, they've lost all their crops. They've lost many of their things. But only one family completely lost their home. Their home was right next to one of the assembly buildings, and it was completely washed away. The wife and children got out by a miracle. The husband was away at the time. As far as we know, none of the assembly buildings are destroyed. They did have water damage, but they're not destroyed. The Lord has provided so that they've been able to send relief to them. We're very thankful for this. We are also thankful for the tremendous growth as far as those who are interested in the gospel. I don't know when in the Philippines we have seen a response to the gospel message as we've seen in the last 8 or 9 months. There's a real openness at the present time for the spread of the gospel. And we're thankful for this. We're thankful also for the nationals who have taken hold in the Philippines. We now have 14 commended workers in the Philippines supported by the Filipinos doing tremendous work amongst their own people, besides the missionaries that are there. So there is something to be thankful for, although we do see a dark door. We are thankful for the blessings that we have seen and are seeing. Another note of praise, of course, is the thankfulness to the Lord for the way He has kept and preserved my parents and their service for the Lord. They just celebrated the 8th of this month, their 50th anniversary in the Philippines. 50 years married and 50 years on the field. The Lord has blessed them tremendously, and we're thankful for this. So there is something to be thankful for as we think of the work, but there is much to be prayed about as we think of the great need in the Philippines and the fact of how much time we have left to us there in the Philippines as far as the spread of the gospel is concerned. Much uncertainty is just what's going to happen next, whether we can stay and what's going to happen to the radio station, what's going to happen to the school for missionaries' children, all these kind of things, many dark questions. We need much wisdom from God to know, to redeem the time that is left to us in these days that we have, that the gospel may continue to go forth. So pray for them. Remember them. We value prayer in our new ministry as we get involved with a missionary home, which we'll be telling you more of in tomorrow evening.
Two other young ladies have a song for us this time, Miss Tasha and Julia Smith.